So I was talking about timing and how I used it in the car business to be able to profit off of it. But I had focused all my timing and effort onto things that really, just materially benefited me. What really wasn't, harmonic with the rest of the world. So I spent time, working on getting the fastest turning inventory, which helped us with the floor plan, which gave us a competitive advantage because we had less cost with inventory, and also brought in faster and quicker turning cars. But I had found that while that was, good and I was good at it, it never really gave me any self-satisfaction. Yeah, we were more profitable. Yeah, we were able to, I had less headaches. I didn't have to worry about my father bitching about, old inventory hanging around, stuff like that. We had a, clean, tight ship. But that timing was based on logic and facts and not something that resonated with me. And this gets into why this timing is so important right now, because we all have the logic and facts and understanding of what should be going on. And the process of trusting that gut, that God feeling, that intuition, that sense, is so important and so vital right now, especially because I really feel at this time, here we are, what, July 15th, I'm getting that same, gut strange feeling that I did back in, March, April, May of 2008, which was only, 5 to 8 months before the October collapse. And I know that this next time is not going to be, another 2008 or even, 9/11. It's going to be dramatically worse because the problems are systemic, they're global. People are unprepared, they're in deep denial, and they're totally blind to this. And at some point, the word of the year, counterparty risk, is going to rip this whole system apart. And what I'm trying to present to you in this report today is why you need to trust this gut instinct and go with something that seems completely illogical, even though that your brain might say, oh, yeah, that might make sense, but I just can't do it. You need to turn that around. So I got the idea of timing. I got the idea of being ahead of the curve. I got the idea of going where the wave is going to go, and you want to swing where the bat's going to be, not where it is. I got that on a technical, logical level, and I think so many of the forex traders are in that same kind of mindset. Like, they figure if they study enough and understand the tides and stuff like that, that they can stay ahead of it. Even though the forex, the stocks, and all that's a completely rigged market, at least in the car business, you're actually dealing with a real economy. That's based on people's, wants, needs, and desires, if the availability of the income and stuff like that. Whereas the stock market's a complete facade with high frequency trading, insiders, doing all that other stuff. So the lightning bolt that changed me from, this technical, greedy, shark mentality, I'm going to make mine before everybody makes theirs, was Dora. I've spoken highly about her. I love her. She's the light of my life. And it was, and I want to tell you about how we met, because I think it's important to show how blind I was to this gut feeling. I mean, I was so technical. You guys all know I had four Mitsubishi car dealerships. We were the largest Mitsubishi dealer in the North Jersey with total volume. And my father hated going to these dealer meetings because he hated other dealers, probably because they were just like him and they, they were competitive and, who's Rolex and who's boat and, just bullshit all the time. So I ended up going to these meetings at a very young age. 22 years old, I'm in the room with 60-year-old, multimillionaire guys, and I'm speaking up because I just always have. I never had the fear of speaking up with people because I knew I always came from a logical, respectful position, and that if I had questions, that they, deserve to be heard, and I shouldn't be let my age affect me. So as a result, I was very ahead of the curve. You never seen a more mature 22-year-old, 23-year-old, Boston College, Marines, all that other fun stuff. And I would go to these meetings, and I know I would rock it. In fact, what's the one of the big auto publications. You know, I got one of those major quotes, you know, back just before I left. So, you know, people, I actually got Automotive News. Automotive News had a big blurb, you know, where they highlight it to like, you know, 72 font, put it in the middle of the article. So I had become known as the guy who spoke his mind in the car business, so much so that Automotive News actually called me for a quote on the domestic inventory problems that I did not have. And I basically, the big blurb was, and I just ran across this the other day, I said, until the domestic auto manufacturers produce one less car than the customers want, they will always have this problem, and they will continue to be in this problem until they go broke or the dealers go broke. Now, I said that in 2006 or 7, and it was a very prophetic statement because that's exactly what happened. They kept pushing all this inventory on dealers that didn't reflect it, and it was upon the dealer to say no or yes, and so many of them went along with it because they wanted to be in the good graces of manufacturer. And I learned early on that the manufacturer will stuff you with whatever they got. You know, this collectivist power will stuff the individual power of the dealer with anything that they want, and they don't care. Once you're stuck with it, that's it. So I learned early on to be an outspoken individualist, which, you know, tended to cause some tension, but, you know, what could they do? I was doing a good job. So I would go to these dealer meetings, and Dora worked for Donnie Deutsch. So Donnie Deutsch did the big show, or the big idea, you know, and my father knew him back when he was young, got him started with the Pontiac account when my father worked with Pontiac, got Donnie his own major advertising thing because they were friends. So Donnie broke away from his father's advertising agency. My father hooked him up with the Pontiac regional zone, advertising back in the late 80s when, you know, Pontiac was like Toyota. I mean, it was a huge franchise back then. And that got Donnie started. He got Snapple and IKEA. I mean, he was a really good advertising guy. He always hired the right people. And my wife was actually his personal assistant. He had two of them, and Dora was the one that, you know, did all the phones. And she got promoted to go work on the Mitsubishi account. She had a choice between working IKEA and Mitsubishi. For whatever reason, she took the Mitsubishi. And when we went there, we were the only two in the room under 50 years old. And, you know, she's cute girl and I'm cute guy. We both recently got out of very toxic relationships, probably the worst ones either one of us have had. And there was fireworks immediately. But my problem was I was still, you know, in the Shark Tank mentality. When I introduced myself, I would say, I'm Chris Duane of Salerno Duane. Like, that's who I was. Like, you know, I was a big shot, and, you know, Salerno Duane meant something to average Joe Blow around there. And my arrogance almost cost me my relationship with Dora. And had it not been for the universe, God, you know, karma or whatever, smacking me in the face four times in a week, I would have missed out on her and this whole path. So when we, I'll keep this short because I know not everybody wants to hear my love story. But I think it's important because you have to go against your logic sometimes and go with it. So like when we went out to the first dealer meeting, we were making eyeballs at each other, and, you know, her boss set me up to sit next to her at the dinner. I talked to her for an hour and a half. I was, you know, hitting on her, making her coffee, you know, just totally, you know, cheesing up to her. And, you know, I asked her, I said, you're obviously not from around here. And I said, where are you from? Ohio. And, you know, after all this flirting and stuff like that, she said that she moved out here with her boyfriend. And I'm like, mother, I just spent an hour and a half hitting on this girl and she's got a boyfriend at home. So she dropped that bomb on me and then, you know, proceeded to, you know, go to the ladies room. And I'm like, you know what? I'm out of here. So I left. I left without even saying goodbye to her. I was just, you know, I didn't have the common courtesy to do that. And I just left. And that was the end of that. So there was another meeting the next day. It was during the auto show. So there was a lot of meetings going on and stuff like that. And so I saw her, I guess, at the auto show. And she comes up smiling, not getting that, you know, that I was mad at her for leading me on that she had a boyfriend. And this guy comes with her, and it's this little kind of wormy kind of guy. And I got all pumped up because she was looking good. And And I was like, if this is her boyfriend, move out of the way, boy. So I came on to her like real hard. I come to find out that wasn't her boyfriend. It was her work assistant. She had broken up with her boyfriend 6 months ago. So I'm like, all right. But I got cocky again. I was like, yeah, next time you're in New Jersey, call me, you know, call me sometimes. And I left. And I'm like, you know, looking back at it, that could have been the end of that relationship. So, I mean, she's a single girl living in the city. You know, what is she going to do? Like, you know, she doesn't own a car. Like, when would she ever come out? So then there was another meeting, and, you know, she hadn't called me or anything like that, mainly because I haven't given her my phone number or anything. And the third meeting, and I see her again, and I said, you know, that she sends out package to, you know, all the dealers to inform them what's going on. And listen, guys, I know the whole chat thing is screwed up. My video is screwed up. You guys probably can't hear it. I'm recording it. I'll get it up as soon as I can. So if anybody can go on to the main blog and just post that, you know, that I didn't set it up right. I'll have to work on that later. But, so just finishing up the story with Dora, I saw her again that she said she sends out packets. I said, well, how come you don't send anything to me? Again, flirting with her. So she sent out a packet to me with a cute little note on it. And, immediately it was like, I don't know, like a Wednesday, because it was all during like, the auto show time. And as soon as I got that, I was like, all right, well, I'll write her back saying, you know, flirting with her and that we should go out, you know, give me a call, give her my phone number, all that other stuff. So I FedExed it back immediately. That was a Thursday. And it was for, I paid like $21 to make sure it got into Manhattan, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning. Like I wasn't going to miss out on this. And Friday came and I'm expecting a call from this girl. I don't have her phone number or anything, and nothing happened all day. So I'm like, mother, what is going on with this girl? So all weekend I'm stewing about it and, you know, talking bad about her, you know, how dare she type stuff. Cause I was all full of myself. And, Monday morning came and I completely forgot about it. I'm like, oh, well, yeah, I was a dick, no doubt. And so she called me up and she's obviously really joyful about getting this letter. She obviously saw something in me because I would have been like, you know, this guy's a jerk. But she wrote back and I went to her and I'm like, why didn't you call me on Friday? And she's like, it was Good Friday. I didn't work on Friday. Like, duh. And, you know, being in the car business, I mean, there was no off for Good Friday. So, so I said, okay, that's it. When are we going out? And the next thing we went out on the first date, we had a great time and we've been together ever since. But that connection that I felt with Dora and understanding that, you know, like to me, that was God's intervention or the universe saying I had to be with this girl, like despite all of my, you know, problems and the bad relationships we had, my ego and all that other stuff. She has been such a wonderful influence on me that's helped lead me to find this deeper peace. But as a result, now I've started to not focus on the technical aspects of getting ahead and doing all this stuff. It's now it was like, geez, there's some powerful force out there that's driving me to do things. And it got even more intense when I found out that I was going to become a father. And we all know the story. You know, I found out Katie was coming. You know, she was 7.5 months pregnant. I sell the house, buy silver. I don't invest in the bank. Now I'm like following my gut over and over again when every logical thing says, yeah, you should be part of the housing bubble. You know, who wants silver? You know, who wouldn't want to be on the ground floor of a local bank? You know, who walks away from millions of dollars of inheritance and family business, you know, just suck it up, take the money and, you know, stack more silver, you know, who moves from New Jersey out to cornfields of Ohio. And yet because of these things and me following it, it's progressively led to bigger and better things. So coming out here, that was a real test because now I went from, you know, my world of, you know, my mortgage paid for two brand new cars every month, insurance, health insurance paid for, you know, dinner, everything was paid for. It was just, you know, any money I made, I just stacked. And to come out here now, all of a sudden, unemployed, no health insurance, Now I have a mortgage. Now I have two car payments. Now I have, no health insurance. I got two kids, and I'm in, and I move out here right when there's the collapse. So there was just no shot for a business, and I was unemployed for months. And, through all of my technical knowledge, I'm like, you know what? I'm smart. I ran dealerships. I can, pass this on. I looked at financial advisor. I looked at pharmaceutical sales. I looked at, management, all sorts. And I applied, I push in the technical realm of, what I knew and, how to interview and stuff like that. And nothing happened. And it wasn't until I stopped and I started listening to something else. I said, you know what? I'm meant to be here, and I need to instead of me forcing my way around and making what I think should happen, I need to stop and listen. And I'm telling you, within 2 days, my wife ran across her girlfriend at a Target. They hadn't seen each other for 20 years, and they got talking. And she says, "Oh, my husband runs an internet company, and that he needs help running his business." And she goes, "You know, if you're not doing anything, he probably would, want to interview you." So my wife goes to meet up with her husband, Josh, and Dora starts telling our story. And within 5 minutes of the conversation, Josh says, "I'm sorry, I don't need you. I need your husband." And boom, right off the bat, I'm in, got this six-figure job working for an internet company. And the idea that what I was doing at the internet company, I didn't like it. I mean, it was decent and stuff, but the process of informing people on the internet and how to use the internet, like I said, I didn't know hyperlinks and stuff like that. That was, again, I couldn't have decided that. I wouldn't even looked for an internet job, but because of that, that allowed me to become more educated and understand, how to do websites and, do all this stuff and the fundamentals of, list building and all that other fun stuff. And that allowed me then to leave that job and do this full time again, another completely insane thing, given the choices. None of you guys, I think you get what I do, but I find it hard to believe that many of you guys would have done all these choices that I have, but I'm telling you, it works. And I'm trying to give you confidence to take those steps now, because we are heading into another time where I'm feeling this tremor going out there. So I end up leaving. You guys know I completed the Sons of Liberty Academy. I did, again, another illogical thing, leave a six-figure job and give away the only thing that I could make money off of. And I was selling the Academy for $177. I decided to give it away for free, and I wrote that whole leap of faith thing because, again, I wanted to embrace this abundance mentality, this trusting the greater thing and not worrying about it. I mean, even Jesus says, look at the birds, do they go hungry? Do they starve? God takes care of them. And if you, trust him, he'll take care of you. And, so much of our technical knowledge doesn't prepare us for that. It dissuades us from that. I even use the Star Wars analogy. Luke Skywalker is flying in the Death Star. He's lucky to be in the right place at the right time. He has all the equipment. Everything's lined up. But what did he have to do to win the day? He had to trust his intuition. He had to believe in the Force. Well, this is real stuff, folks, and I'm trying to get there. I got the website. I stopped writing articles. I start doing YouTube channels. We get even bigger and better. And again, I stopped doing what I was successful even with blogging, doing those articles. That brought in a lot of traffic and built my list more so than even the YouTube channels. Because I think a lot of the YouTube people were people who have been following me since the blog, but it's helped. So then we get onto the YouTube channel, and now we got 3.6 million views in 9 months. And I'm sensing that this time period is ending. Like, I know from the five stages of awakening that this experiment, this me going out there, has a limited shelf life. This isn't something that I planned on doing, this was going to be a career of me going, like Gerald, going on every show and saying the exact same five talking points and, maybe get a different question once every other interview or stuff like that. I knew with the five stages of awakening, this was a very good time to get all those other people out there who are like me. You know, I tend to think the INTJs, because they're, you know, more, they're of the same thinking. They're the problem solvers, the masterminds, the, you know, the scientist type people. And that's what the majority of the, you know, the, I knew that you guys are going to be majority INTJs, and this is not knocking down anybody who isn't. My wife, I love her. She isn't, obviously. Oh, by the way, I don't know who sent me the mouse pad with the INTJ mouse pad, but thank you. I thought that was pretty funny. I opened that up and I got a good laugh out of that. But I knew that I wasn't the only one that felt like this. I knew that in order to thrive in the next paradigm, it could not just be me that saw all this and, you know, stacked and, you know, did all these right things. I had to go out there and help other people to see what I'm seeing. And I viewed it as sowing seeds. You know, not everybody who joined our group, not everybody that joined our group is, you know, are the ones that we've helped. I mean, God, we've touched a lot of people, and it's not just, you know, the 640 here, or the 30,000 there. There's been a lot of people who, you know, think they've used the videos or stuff that to help wake up their friends and families. And it's starting to work. Like when I suffered, you know, on my personal relationship and ruined a lot of personal relationships and me trying to wake people up. And even when we first started going public with a lot of the articles, there was always resistance. The scary thing for me is that people who have known me for a long time, have known what I have done, are now coming to me and going, okay, I get it. And they're nervous. And it's when these average people start waking up, I know the end is near. It's not, you know, because of the charts. It's, you know, not because of that. I'm starting to sense, and I think you guys are too, that people are starting to come around. And I don't know if it's because of, you know, just in our little world, these videos are helping people, or it's just this general sense of discord. I think, you know, knowing that Mitt Romney is going to be the guy against Obama, I think people get like, this is not going to help us for the next 4 years. And, you know, gee, you throw on the Euro crisis and the you know, the Federal Reserve and Iran and like China, like all these things out there. And we just get this ominous feeling that like something bad is coming, and it's causing people to start to listen to that gut feeling. And they may not technically know why they're doing it, but they, you know, they're getting out there, and that this is one of the major reasons why. But I knew once this denial phase happens, this anger phase, this is my main focus. This anger phase is next, folks, and it's going to be hot and nasty. You know, I've already discussed how I think it's going to be, you know, really bad in urban areas, the southern urban areas I can see going Mad Max, northern urban areas going to eventually be pulled under some sort of domestic tyranny. But the rest of the country, I think, is going to be, you know, either scared into or coerced into a, you know, a decentralized power structure where the most local and responsive levels now, if it turns into your local church becoming the big, you know, county boss, it could be. But I just know that it's not going to be equally bad everywhere all at once, and that we need to be able to find these things, which is one of the main reasons why we're doing this blog. And I'm going to get that later. But once we get to the anger phase, you know, the way I see it, the big bad guys, so everybody's like, you know, Chris, aren't you afraid, you know, that, you know, calling out the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers? And, you know, in my mind, you know, first of all, these guys are businessmen. They don't quite, like, their psychosis is not because, like, they think that what they're doing is just good business. I don't think that they see themselves as the Hannibal Lecters or enabling the Hannibal Lecters or that. They're detached from the dirty work. You know, if they say, you know, get something done, it gets done. You know, war start, you know, Gaddafi gets killed. But, you know, they're, you know, they look like, you know, whatever. And they're far more worried right now, and I've always felt, especially in this denial stage, worrying about major systemic headaches. You know, they tend to think inside the box, and that outside the box, things like a consciousness revolution, I don't think that would quite get them. I think they would say, oh, is that like the hippies? Like, you know, what are they going to do with the hippies or stuff like that? And that's where a lot of, I think my biggest threat is that consciousness revolution. And it's not, you know, people stacking silver. It's putting the understanding that, you know, stacking silver is of the opposite consciousness. And I'm encouraging people to walk away. And it's not like, you know, I'm some Al-Qaeda or malicious site, you know, saying, oh, we're going to go take over Washington with violence. I've never overtly been afraid of the big bad guys because of that, you know. And, you know, even though some of my videos are pretty ominous, like that Ode to Debt and Death, which I've recently taken down, might have crossed the line. But, you know, in the effort of a rock video, I wanted to make it pretty profound. My problem is, and it has always been, is the anger phase is with your neighbors. So when I was in New Jersey, I'm looking at, you know, huge wealth disparity, huge people unprepared, and that, you know, being in that area was not going to be a good place, you know, as with all urban areas. And I don't care how small of an urban area it is, they're just not prepared. It needs a constant influx of debt and energy and stuff like that. So, but now, you know, I've had, let's see where I am. You know, it's the unprepared friends and family that are going to be the burden, which is why, again, this loose affiliation of people that we've brought together, that's why, you know, we're starting to do something like that, because I want to have a place where I can, you know, reconnoiter with other people who get what's coming on if this thing gets nasty. I tend to think that, you know, where I am, you know, out in Ohio, I think we'll do fairly well. There's a good group around here, but you know, you don't want to, you know, throw all your dice in the same, you know, basket. So knowing that this denial stage is coming to an end, people are starting to wake up around me. The questions are getting more poignant and more serious and more, you know, I got to do something type stuff. I really felt it was time to wrap what I was doing up totally. That's why I put the ticker on the blog, because I said to myself, if I didn't put a time frame of when to stop producing these videos and actually, you know, kind of close the group before things get nasty, I wouldn't have done it. I would have just kept plowing. So I knew myself, I had to put a timer on myself. As I put that timer up, I started to understand, well, gee, that subconscious, you know, karma feeling or whatever it is, has been pushing me to do that. And I started to realize the logic behind this move is that, gee, you know, we reached 1.5 million semi-conscious people out there. Now we got this community. And I think we're going to be historically significant, because I cannot think of any other group out there who has positioned themselves, you know, intellectually, financially, ahead of such a large wealth transfer. Like in the Academy, I talk about how the Rothschilds capitalized on the Battle of Waterloo. I mean, that was a systemic global shift of power, and they positioned themselves properly, you know, during that time period. And that's what established the Rothschilds as this, you know, huge bank and owns the world and all that stuff. And here we are, we're you know, we're a loose affiliation, an ideologically affiliated group of silver stackers who are consciously aware, who, you know, I believe the most of you are, you know, good family people who just want to be left alone. I think as we go through this process and as we get through the anger phase on the other side, you know, as I pointed out in the Ultimate Exit Strategy, we can do something historically significant. So that's one of the reasons why I wanted to close this down, get this group together, and really start working on this communication stuff. And obviously, with my teleconference today, I don't know how well I'm going to be able to communicate, because I guess I didn't set this up right. So during this closing down, this ticker thing, I get this email from somebody who loves my work. And he wrote me, and I get a lot of people, you know, you guys know, first of all, let me reiterate this again. Please do not send me stream of consciousness emails. I love you guys. I want to answer everybody's email, but I cannot even look at these long stream of consciousness things. If you need a response from me, keep it bullet point. I get hundreds of emails a day. A lot of it's just not worth my time, but I try to get back to everybody. But please, no more streams of consciousness emails. If you need something, I'll answer it the best I can. But anyways, so I get this email from this guy, and he says, this is a quote, I work with national media, and I would like to quietly assist your efforts in building a community as you've described below. You know, I was talking about the Silver Bullet and Silver Shield. He goes, in fact, I've assisted Gerald Celente, Mike Rupert. So I wrote him back. I'm like, you know, I just don't have time to, you know, he was talking about building these different communities on different websites. And I'm like, I don't have time for that. So I wrote him back nicely to blow him off. I said, thank you for your generous offer. I believe in leaderless resistance. So if any of my work resonates with you, please do your best to spread the word. But I'm a one-man band putting out the best work that I can. If it resonates, then spread it for a worthy cause. So he then sends me, he goes, something to like, I don't quite think you get what I'm talking about. So he sends me 6 Excel spreadsheets. And I know how important contacts are. Like in this world, it's not what you know, it's who you know, because, you know, I've seen a lot of very bright men, you know, go through these long discords on, you know, they know their stuff. Maybe they don't communicate it that well. But they're pigeonholed and ultimately frustrated that no one's listening to them. You know, I mean, you can kind of look at Mike Rupert. I mean, as an example, you know, here's a guy, you know, geez, you know, broke the CIA drug involvement story back in the 80s, came out, you know, really saw the big picture, investigative guy. He did the Crossing the Rubicon, one of the first books that I read in my awakening. I did Collapse, collapse.net, all this other stuff. And this guy actually put me in contact with Mike Rupert. And I basically wrote Mike. I said, you know, Mike, same thing, you know, big fan, enjoy your work. You know, here's my YouTube channel. You know, if you ever want to, you know, talk or work together, that's all that stuff. And, if you watch the end of the Collapse video, I mean, you can just see Mike, he's been right, but it's taking, like, he's a very empathetic, emotional person. And I think he's taken a lot of emotional wear on him. And I don't know if he's been financially successful in pushing all this information out. But basically he wrote back to me, you know, a longer thing, but the first line really caught me. He says, the man that, you worshiped or fell in love with is now dead. He said, I guess this line he's using a lot, he's like, evolve or die or, something like that. I mean, it was kind of really off-putting, depressing thing. And I just didn't respond back to him because there was no point in it. So anyways, I get this list, from this gentleman who works with major media, of 6 Excel spreadsheets with 2,000, okay, 2,000 emails, phone numbers, contacts of every single major radio station, every single business show, political show. You know, you want to talk to the producer of the Rush Limbaugh show, you want to talk to, you know, Glenn Beck, you want to talk to, I had 50 personal contacts from CNBC. And I get this email and not just like radio shows, TV shows, cable news shows, producers, like all this stuff. And I'm like, God damn it. What just got dropped in my lap? And my head started flipping because, you know, here I am. I'm like, you know what? I'm closing this down. Like, time's short. And then I'm like, okay, well, this gets dropped in my lap. You know, is this God telling me that I need to go big with this? And, so I immediately call him. I said, I don't know who you are, where you got this from, but we got to talk. So I called him up and the guy's legit and he loves my work. He's actually a member of our group. And, so, you know, we went on to discuss about all these things and, you know, he's a little bit of a toy geek. So we were talking, he's got Transformers and I got, you know, Star Wars and G.I. Joe stuff. And we got talking about that. And I, you know, I really connected with this guy and I really felt he was legit. So he started talking to me about selling me to me. And he goes, you know, I don't think you quite get how good you are. He says, I represent, you know, Celente and Rupert and Judge Andrew Brunalitano and all this stuff. And I'm like, oh, well, that's really cool. You know, you work in that crowd and he's got all these contacts and stuff. He goes, you could be really big, really fast. He says, no one out there is talking like you are. And I know that I could get you on a lot of shows and you could really blow this message up. So I talked with him. I said, you know what? Okay, I'm going to sit on it. But I said, right now, I have to focus on closing this down. I want to be done with the YouTube videos, and maybe I'll discuss this in July. So didn't really talk to him for a while, like 2 or 3 days. And then he emails me, and he goes, do you want to go on Coast to Coast? And I'm like, are you kidding me? I said, why don't you just stop me at the top? I said, like, I don't know much. I'm not a night owl, but I do know that Coast to Coast is the second largest radio show in the country. It had 500 affiliates next to Rush Limbaugh. It's huge. And Greg Hunter, who was on Coast to Coast probably about a month before I got the opportunity, I talked to him, and I've been sending Coast to Coast my emails and my videos and stuff like that. And apparently it's going to, you know, the junk folder of everybody there. And that's why getting a list like this gentleman presented me with personal emails, not like info@CNBC.com, but like, you know, Michelle Caruso Cabrera's like personal CNBC email and stuff like that. And, you know, and not even the TV personalities, the producers, the bookers, the, you know, the researchers and stuff like that. I mean, this list is amazing. And so I knew that Coast to Coast was big, and I knew that that's what launched Alex Jones. So I'm like, oh my God, like my head is spinning. I'm like, I'm pumping out like 30 videos in 10 days. I got people asking me, you know, am I legit, answering emails, just everything, just blowing through this. And I'm like, I don't know if I can handle much more. And so I said, all right, but I want to do it after I close this down, because I knew that the group that we have here is, to me, the intellectually honest group that have gone through this path when it's not sexy or trendy. And I wanted to close that down before, you know, I was, you know, thinking that I was going to get really big really fast. So we closed our group down. I did Coast to Coast. Coast to Coast was a blast, but I honestly wasn't stoned, but I was just so tired. I mean, to be talking about these kind of issues at such a late time at night, and to start off, if you guys listened to the first 5 minutes of the interview, no one talked to me before. Like, I called up and they put me on hold, and I hear George, you know, read the intro. And he starts off with, interesting times you're living in. And I'm like, I'm on the air with like tens of millions of people, you know, everybody in the world's, you know, listening. And I started having a panic attack. I mean, you can hear me in the first 5 minutes. I'm like, you know, to do that. But it took me some time, because I was really expecting a more poignant question, like, what do you think about the dollar? Or, you know, can you tell me about the collapse or stuff? But it was just such a wide open thing. And I was like, you know, I got to focus this in. So I was eventually able to, you know, after 5 minutes, be able to catch my breath and get into a good groove. And then after the commercial breaks, the last hour, I was dead tired. I was like, I was sitting at the kitchen counter with my hand on my head, you know, doing the call and finished it up. And it wasn't until the day after that I did that. As a result of that call, now I'm starting to get all these requests from people who I've tried to get on before. And, you know, at the time, you know, no one really wanted to give me the time of day, including Greg. You know, he has posted my articles and stuff like that, just never really found the time to talk to me. But right after, he's like, man, you know, we got to talk. And I ended up doing an excellent interview with him. He really is a class act. He did a great job preparing me, putting me in my best light physically. We spent probably about 10 minutes just trying to get the lighting right, so it didn't look so bad. So now I get back to this gentleman who's in our group, and I said, okay, I'm ready to hit this hard and heavy. So we were talking about, that I need to cut down on my longer ramblings. I need to work more bullet points, you know, the shorter attention span. And we decided the radio shows are probably the best place for me to go to, because I do talk so much, and that the really nothing is off limits on a lot of these shows, whereas TV, you know, once you start mentioning anything, you know, you'll get cut off, and that'll be the end of your TV show career. So, boom, here I am last week, okay? But then I'm starting to feel this same creeping feeling, like, gee, things are going to start getting bad soon. And I've always said it's either going to become too dangerous for me to say these things, or it's going to be too late. And that same feeling kept coming in. So I've had a couple of things happen in this past week that have really given me pause. So we had a neighbor die. My friend's neighbor, or my in-law's neighbor, died real like suddenly, and so that was kind of, you know, odd. The most traumatic experience for me over this past weekend was one of my wife's friends has been in an abusive relationship, went from mentally to physically last week. And, you know, hearing the arguments on the phone, like she was just stupid. Like she wouldn't leave, like, you know, and here I am, the guy talking about ridding yourself of toxic thoughts and relationships. And here's my wife's best friend who's involved in a toxic relationship that has now turned to physically abuse. And she couldn't call her parents. So, gee, you know, who's the one guy in the world that always charges to this rescue? Me. So she called Dora, and Dora's like, you got to go save her. So I went over to this dude's house where she's been living at, and I was tasked by Dora to get her out with her possessions and be done with this. And so when I got there, and I was pretty cool with the guy, like, she's a hothead and a hardhead, and he just can't mentally deal with her, so they end up arguing, and then, you know, he got a little abusive with her. And, you know, to let off some steam. And, and Dora heard that on the phone. She's like, Chris, you got to go get her. She can't call her dad. You know, he's too old. So I went over there and I basically told them, both of them on the phone, I said, I'm coming over. I want everything packed and I don't want to hear any bullshit when I get there. Because they both respect me a ton. Like, you know, they really, you know, respect me. So I said, we packed up for an hour and a half, and my whole thing was just to stop the bickering because they would throw these jabs at each other and stuff like that. Packing went fine. They both assisted me in moving all of her stuff out, putting it in the van. And I was like, okay, she's by the front of the van. He's in the back of the van, you know, back by the van, and I'm between them. I said, guys, this relationship is done. If you guys need anything further, I said, you guys are not to call each other. I said, because the next time I'm not going to be nice about this. I said, you guys are not to talk to each other. If you guys need anything, you call me and I'll call the other person. But this is done. I said, this has been going on too long. It's a toxic, abusive relationship. You know, the guy needs to work on his financial issues. She needs to work on her mental issues. And the two of them together were just spitfire. So I said, and they both said, okay. So he walked away back into his place. And I walk around the passenger side to the front side, to the driver's side, and I breathe a big sigh of relief. And I said, oh, good, that wasn't so bad. And I get in the car and I close the door and I turn the key and I look over at the girl and she's not there sitting next to me. And I'm like, where the fuck did she go? So I look in my rearview mirror and she's marching in like on a mission. So I said, oh, this isn't good. So I took I looked at myself in the rearview mirror. I said, this is not going to be good. And so got out of the car and I ran after her and she picked up the pace and closed the apartment door on me and closed his apartment door, slammed it. And she laid into him like, how the fuck, you know, just laid into him. And I was like, man, she's got balls. Like she just got beat from this guy and she's going to go back in and give him more. Like what is she thinking? So thankfully she didn't lock the door or else I would have whatever. So I kicked the door and separated the two of them. I put him in his bedroom. It was just like dealing with 7-year-olds. I mean, it was just ridiculous. And here they are, you know, older than me, sent him to his bedroom, cornered her in the kitchen. She kept wanting to say one more thing to him. I'm like, what? You were here for the last 8 hours and you saw what that got to you. So I swear this was like white trash cops episode. I had to physically remove a screaming, crying, grabbing onto the doorway, girl. And as much as he pushed her around, I manhandled this girl to get her out of there because I wasn't going to have, be in the middle of a cat fight. So I have her like Marine mode, like dragging out wounded dead, you know, chopping her hand so she wouldn't be holding the door, dragging her through the parking lot. And mind you, this was, I don't know, last Tuesday or Monday or stuff. It was 100 degrees outside with 100 degree humidity and everybody's going, you know, nuts. And, you know, the neighbors are looking out the window and I'm like, God. So the whole time I'm thinking about this, I'm like having this outer body experience. I'm like, this is what it's like when people lose their fucking minds. Like here it is. It's just a relationship. It's just, you know, knickknacks. They don't have kids together. They're not married. They don't even share their finances. Like they don't work. Like this is just a, and this is the insanity that people are going to go through. And I'm thinking to myself, God, what is the collapse going to look like? Because I know both of them, they're good people. They're not bad people. But here she is losing her mind. And then he starts coming in with the, you know, you've had enough, you know, just go away, you know, that kind of trash talk. So I get her to the car, and I'll try to wrap this up because, again, there's a point to this. So I get her in, I get her to the door of the car, and now I'm physically throwing her into the car, and she's crying. You know, I just want to say one more thing, and then another voice comes out, and she's like, you fucker, you know, like she'll just craziness, and I'm like, you're losing your mind. And I shook her and I said, get a control of yourself. I said, this is ridiculous. I said, you're a grown woman, for Christ's sakes, control yourself. And she would go, oh. So I was like, okay, well, maybe I have to hug her. You know, maybe she just needs a hug to feel comfort or safe or whatever. So I hug her. And the next thing you know, she's like a kid dropping out from my hug. And she tries to bolt around me to go into this thing again. I said, that's it. I grabbed her by the arm and I physically threw her in the car, slammed the door. And I had the guy, I said, you hold this door shut. So she was trying to get out and crawl through the window, all sorts of just craziness. And I mean, this is insanity now. So I'm inside now, the passenger car. She goes, I'm going to faint. So I'm trying to turn the air conditioning on because it was hot out and we're all fighting each other. Turn the air conditioning on, and she's trying to get out, crawl out the window, just insane. And he reaches over, gives me the seatbelt. I grab her leg and put her in. And, you know, and I gun the car in reverse, and I'm pulled out of there. I don't know, doing 30 miles an hour, driving backwards down a blind curve. Thank God no one was there. And I just bolted out of there, turned the air conditioning on. And man, I yelled at her for a half an hour until she got home. And, you know, the whole time I'm like, my wife has known this girl for a long time. She's a logical, careful, thoughtful girl. And I just recognized insanity. I've never really been exposed. I mean, I've dealt with my parents and my father, but I expected it from them because I knew that they had, you know, that they were psychopathic and that they had, you know, deep-seated issues. And here's a girl she's friends with Dora. I mean, how bad could she be, right? And I'm watching her go crazy, and I'm watching the whole thing going down, and I'm like, God, you know what? Maybe it's not good that I get out there and start talking more about this. So then I had another near-death experience. This is my sister-in-law. Again, this has a point. I'm not trying to, you know, tell you, you know, this is the latest stuff going on in Chris. My sister-in-law watches Dr. Oz, and Dr. Oz says, eat a clove of garlic a day, you know, good health and stuff like that. So, numbnuts, I'm sitting there. We just get to my mother-in-law's house. She's just sitting in and out for dinner, and she's got a lump of garlic. And you know what a clove of garlic is. I mean, it's, you know, it's a good chunk. And she thinks, I'm not going to chew this or cut this up. I'm just going to swallow it. Okay, so what do you think happened? She swallows a whole clove of garlic and starts to wash it down with some water, and nothing goes down. So I'm on my phone answering, you know, emails and stuff like that. And I noticed that she was quiet for once because she's a big talker. And I look at her and she's doing the, you know, So Dora is there and she goes, are you okay? And she shook her head no, and she stood up. And yeah, I mean, she was choking. And again, her mom's there, her dad's there, my kids are there, her brother's there, her sister's there. What does everybody do? Chris, help her. So here I am not realizing Chris comes and saves the day, pull the Heimlich, pops it out. And I proceed to yell at her, what were you thinking? You know, she almost killed herself. And so, yeah, pop the Heimlich maneuver on her and, you know, and that. So then I'm like, all right, another near-life experience. I'm starting to sense something going on here. Overall, the more that I've been doing this, the less comfortable Dora's been feeling about it. And she's had a lot of stress-related, you know, panic attacks and stuff like that. Not directly related to my work, but I know, you know, that this doesn't make her happy. I mean, it's not comfortable telling, oh, what does your husband do? Oh, he blogs about the dollar collapse and the end of the world. Like, you know, she trusts me. She understands my technical aspect of it. But we've both been coming to this conclusion that maybe it's time for me to be more quiet and find something, you know, less threatening or more positive or stuff like that. And I think that's where a lot of my, you know, I would much rather talk about the positive aspects of, you know, you know, like what I'm doing today, talking about the, you know, following your inner self and doing all that other stuff. So all these things are wrapping up. And I've always had people question me about this fear thing. And I mean, everything from, you know, I've had YouTube threats, like, you know, I'm going to find you, and, you know, people sending me the PO box and, you know, saying, oh, it wouldn't be hard to find you, you know, Big Shot talking about silver and stuff like that. And then I've had personal emails from you guys saying, you know, gee, Chris, aren't you concerned, like, you know, about that? And, you know, I think the real, for the most part, when the people are asking that, I think they're more concerned about themselves. You know, it's not that they're really concerned with me, because they're more concerned about themselves, because I think they logically get it, but they understand that the responsibility of taking control of your life and assets and walking away, it's not it's frowned upon by the collective society, and it's a difficult choice to make. And trust me, it is, but it's worth it, folks. And then I've had, you know, I've established some really good relationships with a lot of the guys here, and either through strategy sessions or personal Skype conversations, I've had more than, you know, probably 5 or 6 people say, you know, aren't you afraid of, you know, an accident? You know, things like that happen to you. And for the most part, I've always said that, you know, I can't control the outside world. That's one of the biggest things I tell people about prepping. Stop worrying about Fukushima. Stop worrying about global warming. Stop working about JP Morgan. Work on what you can control, and the rest will sort itself out. So that's been my guiding thing. But I had, it seems the closeness of people sharing this gut feeling, this God feeling with me, has brought attention to me. And as a result, Dora and I, within the last week, have said, you know what, we're moving. So I'm putting this house up on the market. I don't know where I'm going. I don't know if I'm going to buy or rent or do something. I'm just putting it out there. But we're moving. And we hired a realtor that my in-laws have known for 40 years. This guy is the most successful realtor in the area. His signs are everywhere. He sold my neighbor's house in 7 days. After listing it right across the way. And so we bring him out, and you know, he goes through his, you know, sales process of, you know, what you're looking for, why you're, you know, doing this and stuff like that. And he's known my wife. He knows vaguely what I do. We're like 6 degrees of connection to him. Like, you know, or his wife is the baby's doctor, the neighbors we've known forever. He, you know, just there's a million different ways we've connected to him. So I'm going through this whole thing, and I'm basically saying, hey, man, you know, you know, the whole paradigm's going to collapse. And I could see his face going from this guy's nuts to, oh, shit. And so he goes to me halfway through the conversation. He goes, you have to come to my lake house and meet with my brother-in-law. Now, I'm assuming, you know, he's successful. His brother-in-law is probably successful too, because they're just a very hardworking family. But he goes, my brother-in-law has been hounding me about this for 8 years. So first of all, do you see how an outside voice outside the family is usually what breaks through? It's never your effort to try to break people down. And, you know, I failed horribly and miserably. And if I could tell you one thing, just don't bother. You know, you got to prepare for them the best you can, maybe drop some hints, but you got to walk away peacefully. And then maybe they'll follow, but you pushing your ideas on them will never work. It's always going to be that outside thing. And hopefully my videos or somebody else gets a hold of you that resonates with you, because I'm telling you, within 15 minutes of this conversation, he got what was going on. He wanted to learn more about it. I gave him all the YouTube channels and stuff like that. But here's this guy who's vastly wealthier than I am. I mean, he's been in the business. He's super successful. He's got way more money than me. You know, way more invested in the system. And he makes this comment. Now, I've never really met him, but he makes this comment in my house in front of my wife. And he says, you know, what's to stop somebody from popping you? And I'm like, dude, did you just say that to me? Like, here I am trying to help you, you know, save your thing. And you're going to put that out there. And, but I left out one thing. The young kid that he brought with him, listened to the Coast to Coast interview. And as soon as he heard me say, urban areas were going to be, you know, more dangerous than that. He goes, dude, I heard you on Coast to Coast. Like, the whole time he's like, I listen to Coast, and I think I, but as soon as I said that, he's like, I listened to you. And all of a sudden his eyes open up. And that's what started this whole conversation. But when this guy who's, I don't know, 55 years old, I mean, this isn't like some 30-year-old, you know, kid. He goes, what's to stop somebody from popping you? And I'm like, all right. Note to self, you know, this is a strange thing going on here that, you know, maybe it is time for me to be quiet. So I go through the whole thing. I said, well, you know, quite honestly, I said there would be no point in popping me because you couldn't get anything from me. I got this stuff all over the place, buried, you know, I don't even know where half this stuff is. And you know, killing me does nothing. I said, and the other thing, I said, when people do decide that they might take advantage of this, they're going to be, I believe, more pissed off at the fuckers that did this thing. And this goes anywhere from the bankers to the politicians to, you know, the guys that are benefiting off this thing. And that I don't think that they're going to be coming after me. I think that they're going to be more worried about, you know, this. But note taken. I think that's, and I told him, I said, well, gee, why do you think you're here? Because I'm leaving. So I'm going through this note, and this is all happening within the last, I don't know, 5 days or so. And when people ask me this, I use this quote very often, and it says, from Voltaire, that it says, I'm very fond of the truth, but not at all of martyrdom. I am not some, ideological, you know, you better kill me or I'm going to not shut up. I've said over and over again, you know, I'm ready to shut up whenever I want. In fact, I planned it. I understand the benefit of it. You know, I know that I'm not going to change the world, but I can change some lives. I'm pointing seeds. You know, to be able to do this, I understand that this needs to stop and soon, and I'd rather on my terms than somebody else's. So, but I know at the core of the psychosis of these bad guys, that they're business guys, and at least in their mind, you know, much like the mob, you know, it's just good business, and that's how they justify all their actions. So I've never been afraid of the big bad guys out there because they understand that there's a cost benefit to everything. I mean, gee, you whack somebody, it may open up the thing, it makes for messy business, you got to pay off more people, you know, it takes more time out of your day. And I think that they're dealing with much larger issues like Iran and China and Chavez and, you know, banks failing and JP Morgan and, you know, the political election. Like, there's so much going on. Like, I don't even think that I'm on the radar. And, you know, if they did, what am I asking people to do? I'm asking people to walk away. Like, I'm not asking people to go wacky, you know, go kill somebody or do anything like that. So I'm going through all of these things, and I'm like, I've already made a decision, man. I need to start taking care of me, my family, worry about my, protect myself, and really work with this group that we've, you know, connected here with. So I had another person, you know, kind of do the pestering emails, you know, I really would like to speak to you. And I usually tell people, say, listen, man, I only do strategy sessions like once every, you know, once in a while, you know, I'll let you know. And he's like, no, I really need to talk to you. So I said, okay, let me talk to you. So I get on the Skype conversation. Again, starts off with the, you know, I really respect your work. You know, you're different. You know, I respect you walking away, and that there's a flow and resistance in the universe, and that, you know, your bright light is as of resistance. And you know, that's what's made you shine. You know, when you go against something, you create sparks and energy, and that's what, you know, your light. And so I'm going through this whole thing. I'm like, okay, you know, I get that whole, you know, flow and resistance thing, and that's great. And, but he said that, you know, when you do this resistance, it wears on you. And I said, well, yeah, I can agree with that, man. I've put on 20 pounds. I got dark circles. I haven't seen the sun. I'm not spending time with my friends and family. I said, but that's my intention. My intention is to work that way. And, so I'm having a really good conversation. And, where was I? So yeah, going on and all this other stuff. And I say, and Dora again, just like last Silver Shield report, Dora's in the room. And I say, hey, why don't you come say hi to this guy? So within like 2 minutes, now the tone of the conversation changes. And he says something to the effect of, you know, you're special, but you're raising a lot of, you know, you're on the radar, so to speak. And now it's sort of code talk a little bit. And I'm trying to keep it light. My wife's here and introducing him and stuff like that. And he says that he knows, some high-level Israelis that at Interpol and stuff like that. And he said, basically, now it's time to be quiet. And I said, okay. So, you know, I kept the conversation light because my wife's here and she, you know, did the same thing and stuff like that. So we ended the conversation, and afterwards, you know, Dora's super empathetic. So, I mean, God, you know, somebody says, you know, Chris, you're stupid. She's going to take that to heart. I mean, and really, like, she's just an empath. Whereas me, I'd be like, you know what, fuck him. He doesn't know anything, all that other stuff. So, you know, while we're on the phone with this guy, I ended it nicely because I figured if it is a threat, I don't want to piss them off. And I already told them, I said, I'm walking away. I mean, this isn't something that, you know, we need to get crazy about. And I've always felt like, you know, gee, you watch those mob movies and they're like, you know, they're going to give you an offer you can't refuse. You know, you can either sign this contract or, you know, make some money or, you know, you're going to get the dead fish. And, you know, and I've been in the car business. I'm not a fool. You know, I don't need to do this for money. It's never been about money. So I get it. You know, besides all the stuff that's been going on, I get what's going on with this. But I had to write him back. I said, I appreciate your gentle warning, but I just wish you did not do it in front of with my wife in the room. I said, she's a very strong empath, and the thought of someone threatening me is too much for her to bear. So I wrote him a list of all the things that I'm doing. I said, I have taken down half of my videos off of YouTube, and the rest will be coming down soon. I said, I'm moving my family again, and I've canceled a huge media blitz that one of our members, you know, is represented, and that's the guy that got me on Coast to Coast. And I said, I could have been real big real fast, but I'm not, okay? I have all the opportunities. I know I could be, you know, really big. But I'm taking all this karma gut knowledge and saying that's it for me. And that I'm going to have only, I have small interviews that I already committed to, but by the end of this month, I hope to go dark and only work within my group. With that being said, was your warning based off of a belief, a gut feeling, or was it fact? I said, I've had four friends in the past 2 weeks to say essentially the same thing, and I am listening, but it is all based off of our belief and gut feelings. I know it is the right things to do, and I appreciate your warning, whatever. And I said, peace. So he wrote back a really long thing, and he says, this one paragraph is what I want you guys to hear. So whenever we debate, there's only three things that I want you to know. First, I want you to know, so he's talking about his relationship with some mentor of his. And this is what the mentor told him. He says, whenever we debate the guy, I want to know this from you. First, what is 100% true? Secondly, what is 100% false? And at a very distant third, what you think you know. So this is what he's writing to me. For you, my new friend, please refer to the first 100% comment. I do not say what I do not know. If I am not sure, I'll be the first one to come out and state that. Ego is the biggest three-letter word in my personal dictionary, and it hasn't been there for years. I'm only donating this much time for you because you are different. So he goes, you are different, or you would not hear from me. So again, I was left with this feeling like, okay, I get his flow and resistance. I get he likes my stuff. I get, you know, all this stuff. I get that he appreciates my work or else he wouldn't be spending time, but there was a threat there one way or the other. And then after that, I was like, okay, that really seals the deal for me. So I wrote back to him. I said, I'm not mad. And he says, you know, I hope you're not mad. I shouldn't have done it with your wife in the room, you know, all that other stuff. And I wrote him back. I said, I'm not mad at you, but I did have to calm her down. I said, your words are no different than four others have said to me over the past 2 weeks. I'm serious. I don't lie, but I also don't intend to be a martyr. I've lived off of my gut, and this is my response to him. I lived off my gut, and more importantly, my wife's gut, and it has served us well. We both feel it's time to lower our radar image, and I feel that with this fall is going to be the big one, and I don't need to be out there so much. I need to take some time and precautions to protect my family, and we'll continue to work and stockpile for a better day. Peace. So I haven't gotten response, and I'm sure I will, you know, after a while, but. I, you know, my whole point is that all of my work has never been for about instant satisfaction. I said that self of me has died a long time ago in the car business with managing the inventory. See, I told you I'd bring all this around. with managing the inventory and worrying about making money and making bills and doing all that other stuff. Again, I could go on and, get, kind of Glenn Beck type stuff. I know I could. I have the drive and passion and the ability to do that. But I know with what's coming, it's not time to do that. And this is all about timing and trusting your gut. Now, on a personal level, you guys are all going through, not as dramatic as what I'm going through, you guys are all going through the exact same thing right now. Do I leave my job? Do I go get a house? Do I, do I trust this group? I mean, geez, we're having, these discussions, inside this group. Here we have, 640 people from 1.5 million people that are, paying to be on this. I mean, there's some level of a barrier of entry. That people would not be joining, wouldn't have followed this, would have been turned off by something. I mean, man, what didn't I touch? I touched on 9/11. I touched on, psychopaths and spiritual things. Like, I've made every effort to kind of push somebody away out of here. People who are overly Christian were like, no, forget silver and guns. You need to just give yourself to Jesus and he's going to save you. Like, I made videos to even kind of push that mentality out, saying, hey, God is only going to help those who help themselves. But you need to, number one, don't fear anything outside of your control. If this is a threat, if the Israeli Mossad is, tracking my word and they got my cell phone, which they do, what am I going to do about it? If they come knocking, it's done. All I could think was that it's going to take a guy who is going to be quiet to, after the fact, we're going to have a lot of people who all these seeds have been laid throughout. And whether they become blossom now or after, you can't stop ideas. And that's what, the V for Vendetta and all that other stuff. And the worst, and the other thing I would say out there is that the guys that would want to shut me up, they would be wise to listen to me. If I have said before, I think it is insane the steps that they're taking to try to control the unsustainable. The best thing that they should do is a debt jubilee immediately. Screw everybody. Get rid of all the debts in the world. They own the central banks. They would still have control of the media. They would still have control of the oil companies and energy companies and the politicians and everything. And instantly, you would turn the world around, at least in America. Everybody's debts absolved. Here's the new currency. And boom, we're all started again. Because I tell you what, man, Rothschilds and Rockefellers are still in charge. The Federal Reserve's still there. And all of a sudden, everybody's debt-free. And we got a new currency going out there. We're going to be chugging along, buying those new Amaros and doing all that other stuff. And, we got a fresh new start. I mean, over and over again throughout history, the Babylonians, the Roman Empire, they would do the Jubilee to return all the land and all the profits and all that other stuff and absolve the debts because of this mathematical collapse. Instead of driving to the end, when you had rulers who had a stake in it that weren't psychopathic, that didn't have this instant gratification mentality, the Babylonians had debt absolutions. The Roman Catholic Church, I think every 80 years they had jubilee where they forgave all the debts. That, to me, is what they should be doing. So instead of persecuting a guy like me or telling me to shut up, they should be saying, dude, what do we do to win? Because I'll tell you how to beat China. I'll tell you how to beat Russia. But, that's not the case. So whatever. Maybe I'm, too big in my head to do that or whatever. But the point is that this is all coming to an end and that we need to start preparing for this. And I wanted to share this experience with you, not to have you guys go, whatever. But that you need to start doing what I'm talking about, which is, start trusting what's going on in your head. Use that logic, use that intuition to do things, and don't fear things outside of your control. Work to your best ability, and know that everything happens for a reason. I mean, I look at Gerald Celente. Here he is. He lost, he lost all of his money in the MF Global, and now I guess there's going to be a settlement where he's only going to lose 30%. So while I'm, kind of poking fun at Gerald because, he went from, everybody needs to get out of the dollar and into Swiss francs, and then the Swiss franc gets devalued 10%, overnight, and then you kind of find out he's his gold is really not gold. He's trading in, and it's, on the COMEX, and yeah, he said he was going to take delivery, but the reality is if he wanted to take delivery, he could have ordered that at any time through any bank and had it in his possession right away, but he was playing with the futures contracts. And I'm sure he was rolling them over and taking profits along the way. But like even that loss has helped more people to save from his mistake. And that's the whole point. Like we can save a lot of other people if people are willing to learn from other people's mistakes. So I wanted to kind of wrap that up. All right. So the next thing is on the Don't Tread on Me blog, on this post, I have in the comments section about meetings. So I didn't do the meetings because of all this drama that was going on. I mean, I couldn't pay attention to anything with all this stuff. I mean, between the the cops episode and just everything that's been going on, my head's been spinning. So I haven't set up the local meetings. So in the forum, I left a little form in the top, you know, like what the subject is about, who's running it, what time, what's the agenda, what are you hoping to accomplish, time and all that other stuff. If people are interested in either a locational meeting, so I know there's like Southern California people, that seems to be like the hot, topic. No, oh, I'm in Southern California. I am too. Yeah, there's a lot of you guys down there, and you guys are all nervous. You guys need to get together. You need to start establishing connections and, work on the internet level. Maybe you guys go meet publicly on your own, make that decentralized community. Maybe start looking out with other people who are in, Utah and Wyoming. Maybe there's a group that we can form up there so that, the California people can meet up with the Utah people and that you're able to do that. But also educational stuff too. If people, we got Coach David who does strength training and stuff like that, great stuff. I mean, shit, I need to get into shape and maybe, having him, doing one of these things will help get my ass in gear and actually go do something. The next thing is the survey. I didn't do the survey either. And I'm kind of glad because I've been back and forth on this. So I don't think I'm going to ask like really personal questions. I think it's really for people to just have, if you're going to be involved in a group, maybe say, hey, I live here, I want to go there, and my email is this, maybe even set up a brand new email account so it's not really traceable back to you. You can put your screen name up there or your real name or whatever. I mean, it's up to you. One thing I would want, and this doesn't even have to be in the survey, but if people have special connections or contacts or stuff like that. Like, this is another crazy thing. I found out that one of our members is friends with a billionaire who's aligned with our thoughts. No, it's not Eric Sprott. And that there's meetings going on talking about getting involved on a personal financial level with this gentleman. To me, that's exciting. We have another guy who owns a mint who is the most – you guys think that I'm radical. He is doing this stuff, I hope to have him on. But I had an awesome conversation. In fact, I spoke to him on Skype on Tuesday, and a half hour into the conversation, he's like, dude, I have to get you out to Freedom Fest. He says, would you come? And I guess Freedom Fest was the next day. He said he'd fly me out there, the hotel, the food, everything, and pay for everything. And we looked at the numbers, and it basically came down to me traveling 24 hours to be there for 24 hours because today's Jack's birthday. Last night was Dora's reunion. I had to be back on Friday to help her out with this stuff. So I wrote him back. I said, no, man, I can't. I said, first of all, I've already had a rough 2 weeks closing down my membership thing. Then I did the coast to coast interview. And then I've had all these dramas that I just went over there. I said, I'm burned and I would not be my best self. As much as I would love to go there and, rub elbows with those guys and actually meet people face to face and share a beer, which I think is the best social interaction. I just can't do it. But he really wants to get involved in our group. What attracted him was the ultimate exit strategy. And he has this going. I spent most of my time telling him to let the foot off the gas because he's close to actually going and doing something on the ultimate exit strategy. And he wants me to be a part of it. He wants our group to be a part of it. And he's debating about if it goes, stays private amongst us. Because I told him, I said, we have a lot of people, who get to the point where, gee, I get silver, but Chris, you know, when I start buying a lot of it, it starts becoming physically hard to move, and I cannot feasibly put all my assets into that. You know, there's a lot of people out there who still have a lot of FRNs out there, and that this could be an opportunity for us to get involved in something, you know, working towards that. So more on that later, but, you know, it's just like so much coming at me right now. It's like, you know, it's almost tough to keep a hold of. So then I got five good questions that I just wanted to kind of go through. And these are more what's going on right now. Let me just pause one second. Morris, I think Dick, somebody, one of the Clinton guys, I think Dick Morris, did this video about UN gun grab and that Hillary's going to sign it. And, you know, Dick Morris is a very opportunist. I think he sees the, you know, where things are going. And I think he wants on the good graces. The guy's a total insider. He's a slime ball. He got caught prostitutes, you know, all sorts of stuff. But there is this UN gun grab thing where they're trying to do the small arms treaty. First of all, it's only between other nations and doesn't affect inside the country. Second of all, no treaty can supersede the Constitution unless it is in line with the Constitution. And since the Second Amendment, there's no question about that. No treaty that's signed would supersede the Constitution. So no matter what treaty they sign, there is no constitutional basis for it. That being said, we all know what happened with Obamacare. So my feeling is, okay, fine, they do, you know, some gun grab thing. First of all, there's no, you think trying to confiscate silver stuff, try getting, you know, the guns in this country. I said that, first of all, where most of the guns are out of urban control zones where they have the most control. It would take about one or two raids for that to happen before cops get shot over that. And you got a hornet's nest of really pissed off people, especially during a time where people are already feeling financially upset. And then for a government to raise the red flag and say, oh, yeah, we're going to disarm you, too. And, yeah, we're going to fly drones and all that other shit around. You know, there's a you know, there's a level there that just hasn't been crossed yet. But once it is, you know, you think the military has trouble in Afghanistan, they would have an unbelievable amount of time in Michigan. So you see these stories that are pumped up by Alex Jones, who I don't have a lot of faith in. You know, talking about the military being trained to use shoot citizens. He posted a video yesterday or a picture yesterday, supposedly of a C-130 aerial spraying 100 feet off the ground in Florida, which was obviously a C-130 in front of a cloud. I mean, it was the most duh moment, and yet it was a big story on InfoWars. But and this whole thought of FEMA camp, I get the feeling like, you know, he's just trying to get people pumped up and ready to go start a fight, which is exactly what they want. A real patriot would be talking about this, you know, opposite consciousness and walking away and, you know, military not following unlawful orders, which it is your right and your duty to follow the Constitution's, you know, protected from enemies, foreign and domestic. And that even in the UCMJ, at least when I was in the Marines, man, they made it very clear you do not have to follow an unlawful order. And even from the NCO level, the sergeant and corporal level, you know, we talked about it, you know, gee, if our captain give us an order, we used to do the, you know, bah, 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 on the back, so meaning that, you know, a friendly fire is a bitch. And, you know, we, at least, and I know in my unit, we would never have anything like that happen. And I do remember getting that test where it said, would you fire upon American citizens? And, you know, I would assume everybody in my whole unit would say no. But why, think about that. Why would a military ask that question if they weren't trying to identify those that would do that? And do you think these guys might get promoted quicker or, you know, might get into special assignments or might get this or might get that? I think so. That would be the only reason why that they asked that question. So, you know, would something bad happen? I think it's a very hard leap for a military that's already burned out on 10 years of lies and wars in Afghanistan and, you know, inflation just destroying them. I mean, you've got military suicides and, you know, the thing I find it beyond the realm of possibility that they're going to get some sort of military action to do stuff on the ground, especially when, gee, you know, Afghanistan, yeah, everybody's got a gun out there, but let's face it, they're, you know, prehistoric people. Here you're going to have a nation that's hopped up on video games, drugs, guns. They're mildly educated, probably trained more in urban combat. It's just an impossibility that they're going to be able to do this, much less corral people in the FEMA camps. Like, I'm sorry, I just don't buy it. I mean, yeah, if you're in, Southern California and they close off the things, yeah, maybe, if you're in New York City, yeah, it's going to be tough. But there's no way they're going to send, Stasi troops out to the countryside and be able to do this. Just, it's not in our DNA. I mean, we're a country, no matter how far we've come, it's still in our DNA that there's a lot of freedom lovers here. And there's still a lot of smart people here, folks. I mean, this isn't like, everybody is all hopped up on fluoride and, MMR shots and all that other stuff, that we still have a good bunch of people, especially in the local levels. You look at the local business owners, you look at the local construction guys, all the self-employed people, you look at the people, there's still a lot of good people here. That being said, I would not want to be in an urban area. Here's another question he had, will we be able to get in touch or meet up and communicate if communications go down? This is something we've been discussing, and I had one guy offer to do a communications thing. We have people going around talking about ham radios. I don't know how viable that is as an option. Another one is talking about live CDs or live thumb drives where you can run a whole computer, encrypted files. This is way beyond me. I would love to find a solution for that so that if the communications go down. But I think ultimately, I think that's why we need these decentralized groups. My original plan of, preparing for the anger phases that we have, an East Coast and a West Coast thing. I mean, between 600 people, I think we could be able to, put together one place. But, I think the more rational thing is that we have 10, 20 different things, and that, some people, like the gentleman in Texas at our last event said, I'll rent out my place. There's a lot of people who already have stuff in place. And if it's up to them and if they want to have a group and open up their door and maybe find an equitable relationship, whether it's renting or, signing contracts or buying property or maybe assisting people in buying property around theirs or stuff like that, I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, that was another option that was posed to me. I have a friend up in Michigan who's, buddies, intellectually aligned with us. He's got a place up there. A lot of good neighbors up there. So maybe, I'll go find a little place up there and be closer to other people that are thinking about that. But there's groups in New England, Tennessee. I didn't hear anything in the Southwest other than that there's a lot of Southern California people, but I don't think any of you guys plan on staying there. And there's a scattered group of people up in like Utah and Wyoming and Montana. And then we have Canadian people, and then we have our foreign contingency. I mean, I think we have like 5 or 6 people in Singapore. I just had a young member who just recently signed up, let me know that Singapore imports 90% of their food. Here I'm thinking, Singapore is the freest economy. Gee, that's got to be a great place. But geez, you're in an area that is dependent upon the importation of food. It's still an urban area. And I tell you what, after I saw what I saw with my wife's friend, losing her mind over her boyfriend, what the hell is she going to do when she wakes up and she finds out that all she's got left in her food is a box of Rice Krispies, because that's all she does have, Rice Krispies and Diet Coke. What happens when she's out of food? Who knows if she's on antidepressants? She can't get that. People are going to lose their minds, and that you guys need to get going. I want to pound the desk and do something about this. So what's another thing? If there's communications that go down, to me, I think the logical thing is if we have a place of that we can reconnoiter to, retreat to, go to, when everything's gone down, and that if you can get there within a day's drive or a tank of gas or something, that's something I think that should be done. And if you're not going to do it with your own group, at least talk about it with your friends and family. Like, say, hey, you can kind of post it like, hey, how about a hunting retreat, or, how about a place by the lake, And meanwhile, you're like, dude, I just want to get out of Dodge. And that's something I'm considering doing. If something doesn't work out with you guys, on a reasonably close level, I may do that with my own family. I'm certainly, looking to get out of Brunswick, whether I end up renting here and maintain my presence, but I definitely want to have a place to get to and soon. And I'm sure all you guys are doing that, thinking about that too. Austin, in your opinion, what would you recommend? Austin taxes. Yeah, and then to me, where you go is not really that important, okay? So people are talking about, strategic relocation and thinking like, where's the free state and taxes and no. Folks, for the anger phase, you need to be in the woods, in the mountains, in the hills, in, the desert. You need to be away from people. And this is what this is, just a bug out. We're not talking about, the ultimate exit strategy. We're going to build, free trade zone. We're going to be trading silver and, we're going to leverage banks and thorium power plants. I mean, that's down the road. We have to get to the anger phase. And that's really what everybody needs to be focused on at this point and work towards. So with that, let me see if I can open up the phone lines. And I don't think I'll be able to. So unmute all. Get back to the anybody there?
Does have the available strength if she's rested.
Hello?
Okay. Now, it says speaking. Well, I can't hear anybody, no. So I must not have called in or something.
Hello?
I hear you.
Yeah, everybody's talking. And hold on, let me try doing this. Pass the microphone.
Hello?
Right. Hello?
Hey, Tom, are you there? Tom Griffin?
Yes, I am.
Ah, maybe this is working a little bit. Can you speak up just a little bit?
Yeah.
I didn't mean to pick on you, but I could see that you're, for some reason, nine are displayed here with their headsets, so maybe a void or something, but I don't know, I even know if you had anything to say, but I was able to unmute you.
Well, I'm more than glad to participate in the test, and
okay.
Also, as you probably know, I've been having thoughts about on the bug out location.
Yeah.
And, I live in Dallas, and I have another place that, anyway, kind of considering for that, but I'm open to other sites as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is something that we need to really break out into these local groups, because I don't think this is a proper forum for it. You guys all know, decentralized, leaderless resistance, I don't even care. You don't need me to talk. I mean, you guys can form your own thing. Somebody talked about some other different kind of Skype forum or stuff like that. Go for it, guys. I mean, and if you want to invite me to participate, I'll definitely listen if it's something. But I'm not moving west of the Mississippi. I plan on staying at least on the East Coast. Where I end up going, I don't know. But I definitely want people to start establishing these relationships and start taking some action, especially if you're in these urban areas. You need to start connecting and doing this stuff.
Yeah, I think that's going to be real important, and I'm trying to appeal to people in the local area.
Now, are you still going to do your discussion next week?
I would like to.
Okay. Just, again, if anybody's interested in doing a meetup group or, using this WebEx platform, hopefully I'll be able to set it up easier for you guys. In the comments section on the Don't Tread on Me blog, the Silver Shield group number 2, the place that you had to log in the comments section, fill out that little form. And then not this coming up week, this is like the week of the, 25th or something, schedule it for that week. Yeah. The 23rd through the 27th. I'm good anywhere from 9 till, 7 or 8 or whatever. And I'll either give you total control of the meeting or I'll be there or sit in, but, I don't plan on talking. I want to listen and I don't want to be heading up another project. So if somebody's got something going on and stuff like that, I'll be more than happy to come in with money or connections or something, but I definitely don't want to start another thing that I can't finish. So yeah, just repost it in the comment section if you want to lead the discussion.
Okay, well, I just did post it a few minutes ago, so anyway.
Okay, good.
I'd like also to appeal to the people in Texas and the surrounding areas, maybe Oklahoma and such. Last week I did get one response, and it's like from somebody in California. And I'm like, well, that's a ways away. So I was thinking probably a localized group, like you're saying, a gas tank away would make a lot of sense.
Yeah. Or, I mean, geez, you know, have a couple 5 gallons in the back and do like, you know, Mad Max if you have to. But I really think, Eisenhower, I'm going to state this again, I really think the silver market's going to telegraph this collapse, you know, days and weeks ahead of time. So we're not going to be, you know, doing this, you know, with our eyes closed. You know, I'm sure all of us are going to be like, oh, boy, this is it. And that it should be reflected first and foremost on the silver market, then the gold market, and then the Forex and then the stocks. And, the, you know, it's going to move quickly at a pace, and there's going to be a lot of fits and starts. But I really think that we're going to be able to have a day, week, you know, maybe a month head start. But I'm feeling it, man. I mean, between this LIBOR gate and PFG Best, I mean, it's the same modus operandi as MF Global. Like, they are desperate to keep the lid on this thing. And then I'm reading that the net commercial position is net short commission position is the lowest it's been in decades in silver, and that actually in the gold market, the commercial specs are now long for the third time ever. Like, it's getting out there, and we're at this end of this consolidation phase. I've shown that chart before, you know, the pennant formation that looks like it's going to end at the end of September. You know, guys, I mean, this is get moving. All right, Tom, did you have anything else?
Just the one thing is that I would like to mention is that it's better to establish relations earlier. We need to, like you say, meet face-to-face, have a beer, and just talk about things, get to know each other.
That's right. And I can tell you from all of my every single person that I've met on Skype and in person, we have a good group of people here. And, you know, I still recommend everybody be cautious. You don't need to be telling, you know, gee, I got a, you know, 100 billion ounces of silver and, you know, and it's buried here. And, you know, here's the keys to my house. And, oh, by the way, here's my wife, you know. Like, you still need to do that. But I think that once you meet somebody and talk with them and, again, have that beer, either your bullshit radar is going to go off or you're going to find somebody that's going to be your best friend for the next 30 years. And I really think, like, folks, I'm not joking. I really think that there's going to be best friends here because we share so much on so many different levels that we don't have in our own personal lives. I think relationships are going to be built out of this. I think our families are going to, you know, end up, you know, marrying each other and stuff like that. I really think later on down the road, if we were able to establish a community, that's how tight we're going to end up getting in that. It just starts with, you know, my YouTube videos and this, and then it's eventually going to, you know, move away from me and more towards you guys. So that's what I'm trying to facilitate. Because I want to be a part of that too. I mean, I want friends and beer and fun and stuff like that. I it's a shame that we have to go through this because I you know, life can be and should be a lot better, and we're just, you know, unfortunately got to get through this stupid anger phase. All right, Tom, let me see if I can pick on anybody else. I don't know. I'm just going to unmic people. Let's pass the mic to David. David Meach? Oh, that's what that was. Okay. Mark Stewart. Let me try passing it to him. Unmic him.
Yeah, hey, can you hear me?
Yes, how are you?
Good, Chris, how are you?
Good. I just figured I'd pick you because you're like one of the 10 people I can pick on.
No, hey, let me tell you a little bit about myself. I'm actually a psychiatrist and kind of got into silver small time about the time I was working out while I was looking for forgiveness. But anyhow,
that's all right.
And you might have your kids back then. I started buying silver about 4 years ago. And I just started accumulating a little bit. But it's naturally, manager of your work and didn't feel like I could pass up the opportunity to be a part of this group. So I'm going to be participating active. So,
well, good. I'd like to hear that.
Yes, I appreciate everything you're doing, Chris. And I'm hoping to make some contact here in this area, actually, live in.
Where are you about?
Southwest Missouri. Ozark here.
Okay. That seems like a good area.
Great area.
Yeah.
Anyhow, Chris, great work. Appreciate
you
doing,
and
I'll be a regular
participant. All right. Thank you very much, Mark. Let me pass. This is a big couple. Let's see if they're available. Steve.
Hey, Chris. How you doing?
Good. How are you? You got to turn down my mic because I hear feedback or your speaker.
Okay.
How are you guys doing?
Very good. Can you hear us okay?
Yeah, you sound fine.
Okay. I figured I'd talk this time because my husband took over the strategy session.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's right. Men tend to do that. They get very focused.
Yeah. So I just let him go his way, but I'm the one that's most connected, to tell you the truth.
Good. I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah. I'm looking forward next weekend. The PA group is planning...
How's that going, by the way? Like, can you share some details? I know, I forget who's lining that up.
I think it's Irving.
Yeah, Irving.
Yeah, he initiated it.
Good for him.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's not just the PA group, because it's, you know, I'm from Jersey.
Yeah.
Deb is from Delaware.
When is it? Maybe I'll come out.
That is next Sunday, as a matter of fact.
Okay, maybe I'll do a live, that would be pretty cool. I got to ask the wife, though, but maybe I'll do a live report from there. That'd be pretty cool, right?
Yeah, that would be really cool. Actually, I told the group we weren't thinking about it, but you wouldn't have been able to listen to the show. Not the show, but, you know, what I'm talking about. But so that would be really awesome.
Well, good. Yeah, I heard you guys got, 15 people that are coming?
Yeah, I think we're probably up to more like 18, 20 now.
Well, if I end up coming, maybe we'll double that, right? We'll have a good old time. Where are you guys meeting? Can you give some details?
Yeah, Valley Forge, Pennsylvania.
Oh, good place.
Yeah, I don't know the exact location offhand, but it's in the Valley Forge.
Did Drew Mason say he's coming? Do you know?
Drew Mason? No, I don't believe I've seen any posts from him.
Okay.
We're actually communicating on the forum.
Right down the street.
Okay. Yeah, because I know he's real close. Like, if
Drew's only maybe 20 minutes from there at the most.
Have you guys met with him or contacted him yet?
Yeah, we had some dealings with him. Yes.
Okay, good.
And everything went awesome. He's a great guy, and I highly recommend anyone to use him. It was a great experience.
Yeah, I've bought a lot of silver. And to be honest, I've always bought from salespeople, you know, either through AppMax or, you know, these local bullion brokers, coin shops and stuff like that. And coming from the car business, I get the sales process and, you know, you just feel dirty kind of at the end of the day. Like, yeah, you're buying some silver, but you just feel dirty dealing with it. Like, as soon as I met Drew, I was like, all right, this is of a higher importance. This guy's a really good guy. He's been an active supporter of the site and my mission. He's a very spiritual man. I don't know if you guys got discussing spirituality and stuff like that. But he's done a lot of praying for me and stuff like that. And I can't talk enough about him. I think he's a really great man. And it's good to have somebody in our group who's connected with, the highest level of bullion brokering that you can get. I mean, he deals with the biggest companies out there. And he's got a personal relationship going back with these guys a long time. So I think it's very important to establish dealings with Drew, because there's going to come a time, folks, where you're going to want to make that last push to get that last silver out there. And I guarantee when AppMax and a lot of these other bullion brokers can't get stuff, he will, because of his connections. And we need to keep working with him. And he's a good guy, too. So.
Hopefully he'll look on the form and possibly be able to attend, because we'll be real close to where he's located.
Well, good.
It was a very, very pleasant experience dealing with him, and I highly recommend, you know, anybody that's listening that wants to purchase to use him.
Okay. All right, so enough about him. So the Valley Forge thing, like, what's the agenda, or like, how did Irving set this up?
Well, I think we haven't really gotten down to the nitty-gritty, so to speak. I mean, everybody has a lot of ideas. because this is our first one, we wanted to, you know, come with, you know, what are you doing for preparing, you know, sharing some resources and, you know, get to know everybody first, because we hope to have this as a continuing event. As a matter of fact, our second event we're planning for the Philadelphia Gun Show.
Weekend
of that, so we're hoping to, you know, either grow the group or, you know, continue.
Good. We actually have a lot of people I know that are in, you know, New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut that better make their way out there. But I also think we're having a group that's forming up in New Hampshire, too. So, between those two places, I mean, you really should get to know these people and take time out. Instead of, going to another kid's birthday party or baseball game or something, go meet some like-minded individuals and start establishing a really good relationship. So I am, I want to clap and I could cry thinking about how awesome it is that we have this little group coming together. So good on you guys.
One last thing about our second, get-together being planned for the gun show. Just about gun shows in general. I would recommend people going to gun shows because they don't just have guns and ammunition.
So,
they have prepper-type supplies and things like that could be useful for us.
Yeah, and when I lived in New Jersey, like, to me, gun shows, I'm like, I'd see, like, the Texas gun show and a bunch of, like, guys with beards and shotguns, and I'd be like, coming from my New Jersey world, I was like, oh, that's weird. Now that I've been in Ohio, there's a gun show down the, there's actually one in every county around here. Seems like every other week somebody's got one. You start to realize there's some serious firepower floating around this place. I mean, there's guys that are really into this stuff. But the good thing is that most gun shows, the guys rent the tables, usually like $50 a show or something like that. And they're all personal business. And in Ohio, you can do personal transactions with people, kind of like off the record. I don't know. I didn't buy anything there. But there's people who sell silver. You usually get those at a great deal because you're usually dealing with a guy who's owned it for a long time and needs to pay the bills and stuff like that. And it's a good way of meeting up with other people that are totally like-minded. Like, you don't go to a gun show unless you're on the side of liberty and personal freedom and stuff like that. So, yeah, that would actually be really cool. When's the date on that?
That would be August 22nd.
And that's in Oaks, Pennsylvania, which is about another 20 minutes north of Valley Forge.
Okay. Can you guys post both of that information on the comment section in the Silver Shield Group number 2, Don't Tread on Me site?
Absolutely.
Okay, good, because I'm sure there's going to be people listening. Like, we don't have a lot of people that are attending these things, but everybody's listening to it, once it's recorded and put up there. So, thankfully, I recorded
it. Yeah, actually, the forum, is starting to get a little bit more active since last week.
Yeah.
Since you started this venue, so... I think you have 95 members registered on there.
Okay.
So I left maybe two more.
I know we have 640 paid members, so there's still, listen, I get it. I'm not the best like web designer, and that there's I can't even set up this meeting right, so I need help. Mustafa's been very helpful setting up a forum. If you guys need help, maybe put in the comment section or somebody post Mustafa's email. So if you want to get on the forum, you can get with him. It's only for us, they can set you up for that.
Yep.
All right.
Sounds good, bud. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
All right.
Let me just go to the next person. Pass the mic. No, you still have a mic. MJ, you there?
Sure am.
Okay, good.
Now, first and foremost, want to thank you for everything.
You have to speak up really loud. For some reason, the sound's not that great.
Better now?
Yes.
Just first and foremost, want to thank you for everything you've done. We're doing the best we can to enlarge the fold, but your, research and knowledge, and you just blow my circuits every time I spend time with you on any number of the forums that you have available, and I can't thank you enough for what you've done. We live in Maryland, Southern Maryland. We're about 25 miles south of Annapolis, outside
mm-hmm.
the East area. You and I have emailed a little bit back and forth. And you referred us to Drew, who worked with him as well. And some of
Yep.
Really appreciate that connection. Awesome guy. But yeah, we're interested in maybe the Pennsylvania area. It doesn't seem like anybody's in Maryland. I'm a surgeon, still working in a pretty busy practice. My partner's a paramedic firefighter. He's been doing a lot of landscaping, hardscapes, just you name it. But we kind of want to get away from this area. We just don't know the timing of it. We don't know if we should find like a little, you know, get an RV. We have an SUV we can pull it with. Maybe a trailer or find a small cabin somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And the timing of things is throwing me off since...
I know. We're all wrestling with that.
So it sounds like it'd be better just to have a, you know, an individualized bug out place, and then we'll come together later on when the anger phase is over.
Yeah, like the idea that I've been throwing out there is, you know, number one, if this is something that you have the means of creating your own little bug out place and you're comfortable with kind of going it alone, I think that that's a viable option. A cool idea that I got put out to me, if you do have a trailer hitch, a great idea is to get one of those small trailers, you know, a small one, like not like kind of U-Haul thing, and have that be your bug out bag. You know, load that up with your, you know, your food or your, you know, have like your tents and stuff. Like, use that as your storage, so it's not like all in the basement or all in the garage or all in the attic or all out in the shed. Just get one of those so that if you ever do need to just get out, you know, everything that you really need is in that thing that you could just tow away at any point. Obviously, you have to worry about, you know, securing it and stuff like that, because there'd be a lot of cool stuff in there. So that's one thing. But what I'm hoping that's going to come out of these little decentralized groups, maybe the Pennsylvania group, is that let's get serious, folks. I mean, can we go buy a $300,000 piece of property out in the middle of, you know, the Poconos, or, I mean, geez, the center of Pennsylvania is empty. You know, maybe there's a cool place out there where, gee, can't we all pitch in $2,000, $5,000 or whatever, and, you know, go in on a property together, have an equitable, you know, business. I mean, it really wouldn't take much to set up an LLC. Everybody gets equal shares. Everybody puts an equal amount of money. And I think between the amount of money that we could collect collectively, and you buy like, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 pieces of acres or whatever of land out there, you know, you can get a mortgage on it, so you don't have to pay it all for cash. And then, gee, you know, everybody's got a share of it. You know, start building, you know, essentially, you know, glorified log cabins or, you know, glorified, you know, bug out shelters. It could look like a campground for all the work that you would really need, because it's really just designed for safety. Just bare bones, get by. This isn't, you know, go make your McMansion out in the woods and you're going to live large out there. It really should just be use your resources for survival and comfort and stuff like that, so that we can do that. And, you know, how difficult would it be to create, you know, 10, 15 structures in a circle, essentially, and then you got, you know, you got a defensible position, and your neighbors are, you know, geez, if they come this far and they're in this group, they got to be a good, decent group of people. And you're going to know as soon as you have those first meetings. So that's why I encourage, you know, get these local meetup groups together, go meet people, go drink beer with them, go, you know, eat, you know, have meetings, you know, go to different places, start doing something. And I think that they will blossom into good stuff.
Well, we're all about that. We're kind of like, we've been in this planning phase, but we kind of want to take action. And that's, it seems like, you know, as a group, there's people coming together. And, but, you know, we've looked at Raccoon State Park out by you and others. Raccoon Creek out in Ohio. We have friends and business associates out in that area, and so we've been through the park. And but I don't know if, you know, you can't really buy any campsites there. You can only, you know, rent them.
Yeah.
They have cabins there as well, but it's seasonal, so they should shut down after the season. But yeah, I mean, I think it's, I'm with you. I'm all about, you know, pooling our resources. The more people that get involved, then the better, because it obviously offsets the cost individually. And we can start moving towards something instead of talking about. I'm an action type of person and want to move forward, you know.
Yeah.
So I guess the next step would be, we have a function the same week, next weekend, and to get from, I think it would be down in the Carolinas, up to Pennsylvania for that meeting would be impossible. But we could tie in, you know, like a conference call if you do put that, you know, make that as the conference call for next week.
Yeah, like I said, I got to ask Dora, but, you know, I'd be more than happy to travel out there, go meet with the Pennsylvania crew. You know, maybe that'll be my thing. Maybe I'll just start going all over the place, and you guys do a meeting, and I'll just come out to you guys and do a show there. you know, that way I can really get to know you guys, and maybe, you know, I'll have the camera, and then, you know, we can see each other better and stuff like that. I got to figure out how to do this meeting better, but, you know, maybe that's what the thing is. But my whole thing is, like, it's time for action. It's time to get serious. You know, I've my public phase is done. I think I have two more interviews, and I'm done. I've already turned down two other ones. And one of them was fairly decent, not coast to coast size, but it was a fairly decent one. So yeah, I'm all about let's get shit done and real quick, because I don't think we have a lot of time.
Yeah, and then I know there's forums out there. I've got to touch base with someone who's a little bit more tech savvy. I'm real good at surgery, but not so good on the computer. Tying into this was, you know, exciting for me
yep.
to be able to accomplish, but. You know, just being able to stay in touch when everything starts shutting down. I'm assuming this format's going to stay open until otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, as long as I have access to the internet and WebEx is up. I mean, and you know, geez, maybe WebEx goes down. I have you guys' emails, you know, like that's not going away. Like if the internet is not going to go down. There's just no way, you know, short of a, you know, an act of God, the internet will be up, maybe not, you know, all the time, maybe not with the speed that you have, but, you know, we're going to be able to communicate. There's just way too much, you know, humanity that's tied to this thing now, and it's just too much of a useful tool. Like, I could see the internet getting up faster than water, because I think in the United States, in order to quell the population, in order to get things going and in order to communicate, I think it's far more important to get the internet up than it would be to even get running water to a lot of places.
Well, I won't monopolize your time. I appreciate the opportunity to share with you, and we'll stay in touch and stay tied in. But if there's any way to, you know, broadcast that Pennsylvania meeting, that'd be awesome to tie into. Looking forward to meeting those folks.
Yep. Well, good. Well, I'm sure we're going to get a lot more people. And you know, and if there's other groups, I mean, geez, we should have a, you know, kind of a, you know, Carolina meeting. I mean, there's a lot of good places around there. So it's just going to take people volunteering and taking charge. And, you know, we got our mama bears out there and, you know, the non-INTJs that excel in being extroverts and kind of, you know, leading the charge. So we need to get stuff going. So thank you, MJ.
You bet.
I'm going to Cardwell, let me just try you again. I see your hands up, and I know you can hear me, but I don't know if you have a mic. If you don't have a mic, you can just type. Because I know Cardwell is out in Southern California. Johnny, you there?
Hey, Chris.
Hey, how are you?
Not bad at all, my friend.
Good. You sound nice and clear.
Oh, well, great. I'm on my daughter's computer, so that's good.
Johnny, where are you from, and what's your story?
Well, I'm from Memphis, Tennessee, the surrounding area.
Good area.
I ran across you, I guess, about a little over a year, maybe a year and a half ago, and been kind of loosely following ever since. I stumbled across Silver probably about 2.5 years ago, so I was probably a latecomer as compared to you, but I feel like I got in early.
Yep.
Got my parents involved with taking some of their loose change and putting it in Silver. But other than that, I've not had a lot of success. My wife doesn't really buy in. She begrudgingly lets me take charge of our finances and do what I would like, but
yeah.
She's not really into it. We have a local farm here that my wife grew up on, and she does not want to go back, but that's my local bug out shelter for right now. We have a barn and a small house there, and her father who still lives there. And I've just been kind of prepping us for that anger phase. When the stuff hits the fan, we'll have a place to go. Now it's not, it's 50, 60 miles away from Memphis. So it's not probably optimal, but there'll be few people that make it out that far.
Yeah.
And, grateful to have a community like this. And I guess my concern is right now I work a lot. I'm working 50, 60 hours a week. So I have to, I'm kind of like a lot of the people that watch the videos most of the time is I don't have a lot of time to participate or get in these group chats, but I'd really like to connect with some like-minded people in my area, you know, so we can form that web of people. And,
well, you may have to be the guy to step up one time and say, hey, you know, anybody's in my area, let's do a meeting. And like I said, I'm going to make this WebEx available to you guys and, you know, to be able to communicate. And I know I haven't set it up, but there's video stuff and you can share documents and stuff like that. So I think it's a real good way of starting to do this decentralized, you know, idea.
Yeah, great idea. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I just posted a thing that's very short that just said, hey, I'm in the Memphis area, you know, shoot something back, we'll trade emails and go from there.
Hmm. Well, good.
But again, I want to reiterate, Chris, thanks for all your hard work. And we, you know, I know everybody here that's joined really appreciates your work that you do. And we're with you, brother.
Thank you. And I've said this before, I could not have done this without you guys. Like, you know, the emails, the comments, the encouragement, the financial support, like it would not happen. But God, I think like what the possibilities of what we can do in the future. And I think that we got a really good thing going on here. So, you know, I look forward to seeing what we can do in the future and hopefully do something historically significant and positive and one that resonates with us. And, you know, we can show the world that, you know, we don't have to live like this. We can do much better than that. And we're going to have to, you know, be quiet, go quiet and do it to show that it can be done. And then, you know, maybe on the other side, after the anger phase, after the smoke clears, after the threats wear off and, you know, people start going into that bargaining phase where they're going to start looking for answers. That to me, I think it's going to be something really good.
Yes, sir. I agree.
All right.
Good talking to you, Chris.
All right. Take care.
See you. Bye-bye.
I have Dora's giving me the stink eye. I got to get going. Barbara, I know you're there.
Hey, Chris. Can you
hey, how are you?
Fine, thank you. I'm a little puzzled today about the way the screen appears in front of me. All I see is my name and yours. What happened?
I'm sorry. I obviously did not set this up right. See, the last time I had a trial account, it was different. Now this is like the Silver Shield account, and I don't know if I don't have the same options or something. I mean, I thought I picked the top of the line meeting thing, but you know, or maybe I just didn't set it up right. I mean, honestly, I've been so flustered this past week. I probably didn't spend enough time doing that. So
I understand from all the things you said you've been through.
Yeah.
But I was wondering, you know, if I was the only one who had this and I wasn't clicking something properly, but now you've
No. And in fact, there's a lot of people who couldn't hear or stuff. The whole thing got messed up today. So that's why I record these things. So if anything bad happens, they can just, you know, pop it on the internet and people can listen to it later.
Okay. Well, thanks for all you do, Chris. I'm happy to have been having a chance to say hi. And I'll give you time to talk to someone else.
Okay. Yeah, I got to get ready because my son's birthday's coming up. So I told Dora I'd go help her with that. So with that, I think I'm just going to end it here. And, you know, we'll talk about maybe next week. I'll go out to the Pennsylvania meetup group and go out there. I think that would be pretty cool if, you know, Dora's up for it. We'll go out there and have a live meeting. I think they said they already have 18 people out there. And, you know, I'm sure if I show up, maybe more people will be more likely to come. So with that, just stay tuned. I'm going to post the link. And that's the other thing, like this time, you know, Sunday, noon, Eastern Standard Time, I'm going to try to do that on a frequent basis. And, you know, maybe we'll try some other times. But I just think for Sunday kind of being a laid-back day, I know some people go to church and have, you know, commitments. But I just think it's kind of like this universal time that's pretty good for not only the people that are in the United States, but we also have people in Europe and stuff like that. So I'm going to end it here, and then I'll give you more information on, you know, what we're doing next week, and I'll set up the registration and test it so that I can actually have the video next time. So, all right, guys, thank you so much, and we'll talk next week. Bye.